Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry KB, and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Friday, August the 23rd, 2019, and this is our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are at Chapter 4, page 50 in We Agnostics, starting with the first paragraph, beginning with, "Instead we looked at the human." And we will be reading this one paragraph, and it ends with, "To settle for himself." We'll be commenting on this one paragraph only. Today's readers are Leslie W. for the 12 steps. Could you please mute? I'm hearing somebody wrestle some papers in the background. That'd be great if you could, please. Thank you so much. So we have Leslie W. on the 12 steps, Athena B. for the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Don B., Jordan L., and Julie E. B. Our newcomer greeter today is Ramona A. and Reggie O. Ramona A. is our newcomer greeter, and Reggie O. is for our announcements today. The share ID for yesterday, Thursday, August 22nd, 2019, our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 13,311. So that's 13311. And the share ID for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, Friday, August 23rd, 2019, is 13,313. That's 13313. Our OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And now I will now ask Leslie W. to read the 12 steps of OA. Leslie? Star 1 to unmute, please.
Hey, thanks so much for your service today. This is Leslie W. I'm recovered in Tennessee. The 12 steps of OA. We admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted, sorry about the background noise. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our...
Well, thank you there. Thank you there, Leslie W. Boy, there was some noise going on there. Thank you so much for your service. And now we'll hear from Athena B., who will read our 12 traditions of OA. Athena?
Good morning, Sherry. Can you hear me today?
Can
you hear me?
Yes, I
can.
Okay. Thank you, Athena.
All right. Thanks so much. Athena B. from Northern California. These are our traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. I pass, and thank you for letting me do service.
And thank you for your service, Athena B. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you have done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted, and that includes your mute button on your phone. Please don't use that. Please use the star 1 and to mute and unmute. It works better that way. We have a nice quiet meeting. Today we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 50 in, on the first paragraph, and that's in We Agnostics, Chapter 4. And now we'll ask Dawn B. to start reading. Dawn?
Good morning. This is Dawn B., recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people and sometimes used their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality and the beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. Well, that's a great paragraph. And I think of when I first came across We Agnostics, the chapter, I thought, well, this is going to be easy because I'm already, you know, I already have a faith in God. And so I could just skip over step 2. I could skip We Agnostics. I don't even need to read it. And what my sponsor wisely pointed out was for me to look at this chapter and read it from the perspective of how am I acting as if I was agnostic? How am I acting as if I was atheist, even though I say I have a faith, even though I say I believe in God already? And so it was a surprise to me to read over this chapter and find, oh my goodness, pretty much every paragraph, how I was acting as if I was agnostic and acting as if I was atheist. And in step 2, where we are come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, I was relying on many things and especially myself as the power that I was relying on to restore me to sanity. So I was looking to my own abilities as the rock that I could stand on. And so this paragraph points out to me how I oftentimes would use shortcomings of other people, looking at life and seeing, demanding the way it needed to be different than it was, and how that diverted my attention from the beauty of and the reality of life that I was living, and diverted my attention to what needs to be changed and how upset I was with the way things were, and would criticize and spend my time in that behavior rather than being aware of the beauty of what was around me and being more in touch with the reality of the beauty of the moment. And what a different perspective when I focus on the beauty of the moment and the beauty in people and the wonderful things about them rather than the little things that I feel need to be changed because I'm playing the higher power and I think I know better than God the way life needs to look. And I think I know better than my children or my husband, the way their lives need to look, and focus my time on accepting that I am not the higher power. I don't know what is best for someone else.
Time?
I don't even know what's best for me. And so when I focus on that my higher power is in charge and that that is where beauty and peacefulness can be found when God is in charge and I am not. Thank you, and I pass.
And thank you, Dawn B., for getting us started. So again, I'm going to remind everybody we're in Chapter 4, We Agnostics. We're on page 50 on that first paragraph, beginning with, instead we looked at the human defects, reading that one through that one paragraph only, and who would like to comment on this
Irene
one paragraph?
Irene B. from
B.
Boston.
Liz.
Katie
G.
Okay, I heard Katie. I heard Irene B. Katie G.
Liz.
Beatrice O.
Low A.
Okay, I heard Liz. Was it Liz?
Yes, Liz.
Okay.
Liz S. Mm-hmm.
Liz S. is in Sam, and I heard you, Beatrice.
Donna
Mo
B.
I'm sorry. Was that Mo H?
And
yes.
Donna B.
You sound in the background, Mo. Okay. And then was that Donna B?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. So I have everybody lined up. I have Irene B, Katie G, Liz S, Beatrice O, Mo H, Donna B. Irene B, please go ahead, followed by Katie G.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your beautiful service. I am Irene B., a recovering, gratefully recovering bulimic from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. What jumped from this paragraph, and it really jumped at me, was intolerance. I mean, intolerance just really has been speaking to me, mostly because I'm very intolerant. And I didn't think I was, but I am. And I'm mostly very intolerant of myself. And intolerance is coupled very nicely with judgment, comparing and condemning. Oh, my Lord, I lived in eternal condemnation. The self-hatred was pretty amazing. And then as I got fat, I hated myself more for being fat and for not being able to be what the world considered as a lovable entity. And then as I got older, I hated myself because I was trapped in bulimia. So I lived with a tremendous buildup of human emotion that came from being intolerant of myself, not accepting myself. And at some point, the self-hatred is like the chicken or the egg. I hated myself because I was fat. And so I ate. So So that made me hate myself more. So I ate some more. So it's like, where does it stop? And this idea, becoming aware of my intolerance, helped me do the opposite of intolerance, which is acceptance. So if I can just accept myself, maybe I can replace love where self-hatred used to live. But first, you know, you move slowly from acceptance, and eventually the goal is to love myself. And, you know, in order to be able to change, because this is all about changing, I need to be able to change my point of view. I need to be able to change my behavior. And once I do that, maybe I can live in a place of peace, love, and acceptance instead of intolerance, judgment, comparing, condemning myself and the world and the people around me. And on my own, I couldn't do this. And I will always end my share saying that without this program, none of that would be possible. And with that, I'll pass.
Time.
Listening.
Thank you, Irene B. Katie D., you're up, followed by Liz S. Katie?
Good morning, Katie G., recovered in Boston. Yeah, I mean, so resentment is the number one offender, right? And later as we move through step four, we'll look at that. But I just, you know, I'm really struck by this paragraph. One of the things a sponsor asked me once when I was going through the steps again is, where am I being intolerant of Overeaters Anonymous? Where do I think that OA is the problem? Where am I criticizing messages that may not work for me and saying, you know, all of OA doesn't work? And my critical mind does what? It leads me back to the food. It cuts me off from God. And a couple years ago, a woman in whom the problem has been solved, I like to go through the steps every year because I like the effect produced by God, and some spiritual teachers turned me on to that. And this spiritual teacher taught me about the realization that when I am criticizing you, I swear to you, anything that I criticize about you, I can tell you I do the same thing. Now, you might be saying, whoa, whoa, KDG, there are some pretty violent people out there. Are you saying you're murdering people? No. No, but do I character assassinate people? Do I murder their personality? Mm-hmm. I do. I do. And so I can see myself in all of you, and the humility of that, oh my gosh, it brings me right down off my pedestal where the great KDG needs to be destroyed, right? Because what are we talking about? We're talking about my ego, and the one thing that will keep me away from God is my ego, is my critical mind, and it's all coming whenever I'm criticizing. It's all coming from fear, right? Later we'll talk about, we'll learn what is the evil and corroding thread, that fabric that gets me every single time, this fear that I'm not good enough. And what is agnostics teaching me? When I'm operating from fear, there's no God. And look, I'm not telling you if you have fear, you can't have faith, because I don't believe that. That's way too black and white. That's way too binary for me. But for me, it's about, yes, there is fear, and how can I operate differently today? And before I was recovered, there's no way of just saying, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. I had to uncover, discover, and discard everything that was me. And the only way for me, a hardcore, low-bottom addict, to get to God is to go through the steps, is to tear away all these old ideas that dominate me. And today, as a recovered woman, I need to ask myself each and every day, who am I being intolerant of today? Why? And I'll wrap up with this, Sherry KB. If I am, I will go right back to the food. It is the number one offender. It will kill me. It will cut me off from God. I'm so grateful we can all live in the solution today. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Katie G. All right. Liz S., you're up, followed by Beatrice O. Liz?
Hi, it's Liz S. from New Hampshire. And I was really struck by this paragraph because it reminded me of when I was really deeply entrenched in the food. And I want to thank the reader of the paragraph very much, because she struck on a lot of points that hit home for me. And I was just reading where Bill writes about the human defects of these people and sometimes use their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. Well, when I was really eating heavily, the person I hated the most was me. And the only way that I could feel better about myself was to find something wrong with you or anybody. And that's what I did. And whether it wasn't you were intolerant or you were wrong, you were never right. And that is what I had to do, because the only way that I could feel better in any sense was to make somebody else wrong. And that was false pride, that was arrogance, that was superiority. And those were all those defects lined up in a row, because I couldn't stop eating. So I had to find a way, because my self-esteem was so low, to find, as he says, to find something wrong, some defect in your character that could somehow compensate for the lack of whatever I needed to feel better. And I there was no light or beauty. There was only darkness. And I didn't even consider a spiritual aspect. There was none. The wonderful, the beauty, the miracle was when I walked into my first OA meeting. And when it was pointed out to me that I had these defects of character, that I had these problems, other than being horrified, the sense of relief was enormous, because I was told that it could be lifted, that they could be lifted, that there was a solution, that I could be helped, that there was help, that there was a power greater than I was. I didn't have to know about that power. I didn't have to name it. I didn't have to understand it, but that I didn't have to continue living the way I've been living, beginning with stopping the food, but continuing with constantly, constantly, constantly finding fault with the world, which is exhausting, that could stop. And that was the miracle, that there was a spiritual solution. I didn't have to get it. I didn't even have to fully agree with it, but it was a lot better than the way I'd been living. And that was the light that finally came into my life. And that'll close. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz S. Beatrice O., you're up, followed by Mo H. Beatrice?
Good morning. This is Beatrice O. from Northern California. And I really like this paragraph, because it says wholesale condemnation. And it says we talked of intolerance when we were intolerant ourselves. Well, I think it's an AA or whatever they say, you know, love and tolerance is our code. And and as far as wholesale condemnation, it says a fair hearing. You know, I never even gave God a fair hearing in the beginning. I felt like I was forsaken, because I had a mother who was a paranoid schizophrenic, and she was a super duper ego, extra large narcissist, and it was a mental illness. So, you know, I grew up learning. I learned from her to be very critical. And also it was part of the culture, you know, sitting on the porch, drinking lemonade, and judging people as they walk by. People say, oh, yeah, I'm at the airport. I'm just people watching. Am I people watching or am I judging? The other thing is fat. You know, I kind of cringe when people say fat, because I think it's a critical word and it's disrespectful. And for me, it carries judgment. And so I've been spending a lot of time thinking about my weight and how it's tied to my self-worth. I remember hearing a girl at a meeting say, you know, I just got pulled over and I got a ticket for speeding, but it doesn't matter because I'm thin. And, you know, my self-worth has been tied to who I am by my weight. You know, we say in these rooms sometimes, I am enough, I do enough, I have enough. I never wanted to say I have enough because I always wanted more. And I guess the last thing I'll say, I believe that this is a spiritual battle. And for me to just make a truce and say that it's a disease is not enough for me. And I guess the last thing I want to say is where it says, you can't see the forest from the trees. And so the reality and the beauty of who I am, I acknowledge that every day, and that I am a child of God, and I will always be perfectly imperfect. And I don't believe that anybody on this planet is perfect. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.
With that, I'll pass.
Thank you. Mo H., you're up, followed by Donna B. Mo?
Good morning. This is Mo H., recovered compulsive eater in Walnut Creek, California. Thank you, Sherry KB, for your service, all those giving service, and welcome to the newcomers. Well, this paragraph just really hit me this morning, and I wasn't going to share, and I thought, oh, man. So intolerance. Intolerance, I looked it up, is a lack of open-mindedness or sympathy or patience, not being, being unwilling or unable to grasp the value or value the point of view or practice of others. This is me. I am forever doing 10 steps on being intolerant of my husband. I think I know what is best for him. I think I know he and one of my daughters the same way that I know better. And I was talking to my sponsor about it recently, and she used the word arrogant, that it is very arrogant of me to think I know what is best for others, to think I know what is right. I don't know anything. I need to go to God, and I am so grateful for 10 steps. Because when that attitude of resentment or intolerance or closed-mindedness, you know, only one way that I can go to the 10th step, do that with somebody. And usually my answer shows up in the midst of doing that 10th step of how can I be helpful in this situation? How can I be of service? And sometimes it's just to be quiet and not say anything and not try to say how I feel something should be done. And this little phrase here, you know, we miss the reality and the beauty of the forest because we were diverted. I was diverted by the ugliness of some of the trees. And I didn't get that for a long time, but it shows me that if I'm just focusing on one person, one thing, one irritant, I'm missing the beauty of everything else that's possible out there. So I just really encourage people to, you know, get in there and do the footwork and do that 10th step. And that way just open myself up, become open-minded, not be intolerant of what's going on, but to tolerate and to accept everything the way it is and not the way I would have it. And so with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mo H. And before we hear from Donna B., I just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 50, the first paragraph, and I'll take more names after Donna B. shares. Donna?
Good morning. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic, calling from Denver, Colorado. Thank you to everybody on the line. The first thing that comes to mind in regards to this paragraph especially with the metaphor to the trees and to the forest, is that I've learned for myself and for others that have been children of trauma that it's a survival skill to look for the next possible threat. And so I think about my metaphor is less of a forest and more of a swamp, that if I'm walking through this swamp and I get distracted by the beautiful flowers on the edge of the swamp and I take time and I pause and I smell them and I enjoy them, I'm not going to be aware of the crocodile that's coming out of the swamp to just, you know, take a big bite out of me and destroy me. So I have got to be vigilant. I have got to keep my eye on the swamp looking for the crocodile. It is my job to protect myself from every possible threat that I can imagine and every possible threat that I can't imagine. Part of coming into the 12-step program of recovery and learning that there is a power greater than myself that I can access, that I can rely on, that I can abandon myself completely to God's care and protection, is that I don't have to be quite as vigilant. I don't have to look for crocodiles constantly. But that there are opportunities when I can hand it over to God and say, hey, will you look for crocodiles? Because I really want to rest. I really want to smell the flowers today. And as my faith in a higher power, like a real faith, real dependence on that power grows, I find that I can be less distracted by my own vigilance and less distracted by the possibility of crocodiles, because God has got it. God's got my back. So when I work with my sponsees and when I have the courage to use my kind adult voice with myself instead of the inner critic, one of the things that I like to remind my sponsees and others is that I'm not bad, even if it is my nature to look for the faults in others. And even if it is my nature to look for the faults in every single situation that I am in, I'm not bad. It's a product of the way that I was raised. It's a product of the experiences that I've had.
Time.
And with God's help, I can move beyond that outlook on life. Thank you.
And thank you, Donna B. So, again, we're on page 50, paragraph 1. Who would like to jump in?
Jackie A.R.
Okay, I heard that. Was that Beth?
Julie E.B.?
I heard
Bonnie,
it Beth, though.
Bonnie
C. Jack, maybe?
Okay.
Did you hear Jackie?
Okay, all right. I have Devorah S., Julie E.B. I heard somebody else besides Jackie. I've
Bonnie
got you, Jackie.
G.
I'm sorry,
Lisa
G?
J.R.
Bonnie
hold on. Who's,
G.
I'm sorry. Hold on, please. Who was that kind of quiet voice
Bonnie.
With the last initial B? Hello?
Bonnie G.
Bonnie G. Okay. Thank you, Bonnie G. Okay. And I have you, Lisa J.R. And I'll take one more.
Michelle M.
Michelle M.
Patty G.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not sure if we'll have time for you, Patty. We'll see what we can do, okay? All right, so I have Devorah S., Julie E.B., Bonnie B., Jackie H., Lisa J.R., and Michelle M. Devorah S.,
Michelle.
Please go ahead. Star one to unmute, Devorah. Can't hear you.
Hi, good morning,
there
everyone. My name, there I am. Thank you so much. Sherry, and everyone on the line that makes this meeting possible. I'm here, you know, it's amazing. My name is Devorah S., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey. And, you know, I just have to say, it's like amazing. Like, I'm listening to everyone speak, and you're all telling my story. And it's like here we are from so many different backgrounds, so many places. Everyone has their own experiences, but the bottom line is that we all have this this common ground. And I'm not unique. And for years, I all thought that I was very unique, that if everybody would just you know, just, you know that, you know, I'm very unique, and I go through things that no one else has gone through. And if you would only know how I feel, then you'd also, you know, would go along with how I feel and not be judgmental and, you know, whatever, and just accept me for who I am. And the truth of the matter is, I really had to do a lot of work on myself, because I was these people, you know, I was this person who this paragraph is describing, you know. You know, I was the one who found, you know, being judgmental on other people and thinking that I know what's best. And today, you know, after doing all this work and continuing doing this work, you know, I'm seeing that I don't know anything. I have nothing. I'm just another, like they say, a bozo on the bus. And, you know, and more gets revealed to me each day as I'm working these steps. And you know, so just really grateful. Here I am, you know, I just turned 60 last month. And I am a product of just growing, you know, and learning about myself and how to be of service. Our the practices that I do each day has to be one of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. That's who we are today from working these steps. That's who I strive to be. You know, getting out of myself, releasing my ego. Ego reduction, getting, because it's always, I always thought, I know what's best, right? If you do what I do, then you'll be fine. But I'm learning on a daily basis what it is to just show up and keep quiet and not judge. And the best thing that I do each day is to look at people with patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. And that's I'm just so grateful for these guidelines in this book, you know. And, you know, I heard someone say the other day, like, I didn't even know the directions were in the book, you know. And I say that, too. I didn't know the directions were so simply laid out in this book because I picked and chose what I wanted to read. And that's not going to work. So today I'm willing and I'm open and grateful that I have an opportunity today to practice these principles. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dvorak. Julie E.B., you're up, followed by Bonnie G. Julie?
This is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered today. And I just wanted to share. Sometimes I get very complicated when I'm sharing, but there is something very simple, which is my over-focus on certain individuals or society as a whole and how they share a sense of spirituality. You know, I understand spirituality to be the connection between me and the universe and other people. And I do, you know, feel deeply connected today, and I have not always felt connected, but here's what happens when I start looking at the trees instead of the forest, the individuals, the judgment, the intolerance, and when I start looking at myself that way. If I'm looking at the trees and not the forest, I get lost. It's that simple. And if I'm just looking at myself and looking down at my feet or just looking in the mirror, I'm going to slam into a tree and never get out of the forest. So speaking as someone who was walking in the forest earlier today, it's good to know a way in and out. So I just want to encourage people to call a sponsor and have someone walk with you step by step. Working with another person one-on-one is so much better than just sitting in the forest, jumping from tree to tree, food plan to food plan, perfect sponsor, perfect religion, whatever you're looking for to wait to start. And just get going. If I can be of service, let me know. Thanks for letting me share. And I pass.
And thank you, Julie B. Bonnie G., you're up, followed by Jackie H. Bonnie?
Hi, this is Bonnie G. Can you hear okay? I'm using a new headset. Hope we're good. I'm in southern Florida. And the first thing that came to my mind when I read this was contempt prior to investigation. And I grew up in a home where everything was criticized, and I don't think I've ever heard a positive thing. And it took me till I was 30, and I'm 71, to hear that the at a, an AA meeting, to look at the glass as half full rather than half empty. And what a concept. And then I had to learn that with OA meetings. And the gratitude that I feel about finding vision after all those years of finding the big book, of finding a way to study, to finding a way to a higher power, and knowing that there's no need for me to be judgmental about anything. And what a world it opens up when I'm free of judgment. And I just have so much gratitude for that. Thank you for letting me share. Pass.
Thank you, Bonnie G. Jackie H., you're up, followed by Lisa J.R. Jackie?
Good morning, Shay. Thank you for your service. Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. Wow. As I was sitting here listening to all the rich, absolutely rich, beautiful shares this morning, it just took me back to when I came in over a year ago, when I first dialed into this meeting, and I heard these kind of shares, and I thought, oh my goodness, I don't know what these people have, but I want a piece of it. And I was not new to 12-step. I had been in 12-step for over 11 years in another program, and the big book kind of sat on my shelf, didn't have much value to me. In fact, I was very critical and very judgmental of, quote, the big book thumpers that I heard around the rooms in AA. And that just brings me to the intolerance. My whole life, okay? I just had so much shame, so much not enough about myself, so much criticism, so much intolerance of myself that I just projected it out, and that's what I saw everywhere. Everybody I saw all of my character flaws in them, and I was so intolerant. But I had an open mind. I would tell you, I was so in denial, and when I was a pastor's wife, everybody outside the church was wrong. I ended that career, if you want to call it that, and no longer in church. And then everybody in the church was wrong. And then I came into AA, and everybody in the rooms kind of were wrong too, but everybody outside of AA was wrong. Wherever I was right. And let me tell you something. I am so grateful that I followed the instructions in this book precisely, that I had a change of mind and a change of heart. And like so many beautiful shares this morning, when I do my 10th steps and I do when I uncover, discover, and discard those things that are blocking me from looking out at this beautiful, beautiful people that are on this planet, then I get to see the beauty in all of you, and I get to see the beauty in myself. And you know what? I did not want to come in OA. I didn't want to admit that I was a compulsive overeater. And I'm grateful that I am, because I have a life today that I have never had ever before. And I just keep going deeper and deeper and finding more and more things to uncover. And then I get to discard them. And the thing about it is, I don't get to discard them myself. Thank you. I have a higher power that's the job of my higher power. I get to do the footwork, and then my higher power removes those blocks, and I get to be a loving, kind human being on this planet. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Jackie H. And Lisa J.R. and Michelle M., if you take 2.5 minutes each, that'll work. Lisa J.R.?
Thanks so much. This is Lisa J.R. from Baltimore, Maryland. Give me a heads up when I get there, if you would. When I came into program, you know, I was like a heat-seeking missile, man. I lived my life like it was a chess game, like I was always planning my next move, so that I would stay safe and I would have what I needed. And I would, you know, pick people apart with precision accuracy. I was sort of like Mr. Darcy, you know, my good opinion once lost is lost forever. And then I came into the rooms and I did a thorough fourth step. And in that fourth step, somebody gave me a sheet with selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and fearful. And I began to see a pattern of building, you know, that I lived my life, you know, in these ways. And it wasn't to bash me. It was to show me what I do. I use that selfish and dishonesty to give me the green light to that self-seeking behavior. And I use that sheet because I have a built-in forgetter. And I forget those, you know, yeah, I'm selfish, but how am I selfish? How am I dishonest? And so, you know, I can stop from getting into that self-seeking behavior. I can, you know, the light turns green. I don't have to go through it. I don't have to go through it. I don't have to character assassinate, judge, project, you know, bully people, manipulate people with anger. I can stop and just pause when I get agitated. So the you know, beautiful thing about this particular paragraph, my husband and I were in Colorado hiking once, and, you know, this is early on before program, and I'm looking out at this beautiful scenery, and I see the beetle kill, the dead little matchstick trees, and I'm focused, hyper-focused, instead of the beautiful Crystal Lake and the beautiful forest and mountains, I'm looking, oh, what a shame, you know, the beetle kill has marred this beautiful place. So I've, you know, programs help me turn that around and look at the broad picture, the beauty, have gratitude, see the good in others instead of just the bad. And I'm so grateful, you know, God uses this program and you guys to help restore me to sanity. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Lisa J.R. And Michelle M., you'll take us out. Sorry about that, Patty T. Please call in next Monday or Sunday.
Hi.
Go ahead, Michelle. Thank you.
Michelle H. is my last initial. This is actually the first time sharing on the line, and I'm 4 days abstinent, and I just wanted to briefly share that line at the end where it talks about those that miss the reality and the beauty of the forest. They were diverted by the ugliness of the trees, and that's an expression used of someone who is too involved in the details of a problem to look at the situation as a whole and see the solution. And that was me. I couldn't see the solution. I was so absorbed in the problem with new diets that would fix me, focused on the scale constantly. And I really like the very first sentence of there is a solution. It says that we of Alcoholics Anonymous know thousands of men and women who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem. So for me today, that is where I want to stay. And the solution, not focused on the problem, the disease. And I like the saying, I don't know where it is in the big book, but today, acceptance is the key to all my problems. And with that, I pass.
Perfect timing, Michelle M. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for sharing this morning on the meeting. That's all the time we have for sharing today. I wanted to thank Team Friday, Leslie W., Athena B., Don B., Jordan L., Julie E. B., Ramona A., and Reggie O. Thank you all so much for your service. And now we will close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer, where Jordan L., please read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only and keep you until then. Jordan? Star 1 to unmute, please. Jordan L.? Okay. Julie E.B., are you there, please? Can you read page 164?
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered in Colorado, reading
page 164. There we go. With my bifocals, let's see. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you shall surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.